Hi, welcome to valuationpodcast.com, a podcast and video series about all things related to business and valuation. My name is Melissa Gregg, and I provide online valuation and mediation services in St. Louis, Missouri, specifically for divorce, partner disputes, and estate planning. Today, we're going to discuss specialty tax services and tax credits for business owners with Randy Crabtree. He's a CPA in Schaumburg, Illinois. He's also co-founder and partner of Tri-Merit Specialty Tax Professionals and a fellow podcaster. He has 30 years of public accounting and tax consulting experience. He's an author, lecturer, and podcast host of the Unique CPA podcast. Also, something that Randy may not toot his own horn about is he was also listed in the Ones to Watch section of Accounting Today's 2021 Top 100 Most Influential People in Accounting. Well, we are so lucky to have you here, Randy. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. And I have to say, that was a very professional introduction. You seem like you're a very experienced podcaster. Nice.
You know what? Keep it simple and only say a few things, and it's really easy.
Nice. Well, you did a great job.
Well, and today we're going to talk about tax credits, which I feel like business owners really want to know about, or they just kind of like, if somebody tells me about it, maybe I'll figure it out. They don't always know kind of how it's important to their business. And so today, kind of talking about, you know, and when we start talking about this, we start talking about tax credits, and accountants, financial people understand this. I mean, kind of. but I think regular people get confused because what are the difference between tax credits and tax deductions? And can I just do one of them? So help us out kind of with the basics.
Yep. And there's actually probably three things, tax credits, tax incentives, tax deductions. And I can kind of go into incentives a little bit too, but
yeah. In
general, a tax credit is a dollar for dollar tax savings. So if I have $100,000 tax credit and my tax bill was $400,000, I'm going to reduce that to $300,000. I'm going to use my credit to pay part of my income taxes. So it's very valuable. A deduction is a straight reduction of my taxable income. And so if I have that same $100,000, but now it's a deduction rather than a credit, you know, the credit saved me $100,000. That's what's going back into my bank account is $100,000 for a credit. For a deduction, I'm going to take the $100,000, reduce my taxable income. Let's say I'm in a 30% tax bracket. I save $30,000, 30% of the $100,000. And so that's still a nice savings, but obviously a credit's a lot more valuable than a deduction.
Well, and the tax deductions are kind of like your normal expenses, right? Yep. Like you're always going to have them, whereas tax credits have kind of a different purpose. And, you know, some of them, like I don't even think I know as much about tax credits as I should. But like, what is the purpose of them specifically for business owners? But also, I guess I always remember like people buying them. And so maybe you can help us understand like how we acquire the credits.
Yeah, it's so the credit's usually tied to some kind of incentive. You get a credit because you're doing something that Congress has to, if we're talking federal credits, that Congress has decided should get an extra incentive for you to do this, whatever it is. And so a few common ones are research and development tax credits, or a big one recently that everybody's heard about was the employee retention credit. And those were out there, R&D's out there to put an incentive on companies to do R&D projects within the U.S. rather than outsourcing it overseas or to another country. Employee retention credit was there because you as a business were either affected directly by COVID, by a reduction in revenue, or by being shut down by some government mandate. So it's usually the credits out there as an incentive some way or another compared to just normal operating expenses. You know, you pay your rent, normal operating expenses, I get to deduct that. You go out to bring a client out to lunch, normal operating expenses. Although those are often treated a little bit different, although in 21 and 22, we get a full deduction for that. So that's why credits exist, to really put an incentive on businesses to do something extra than they normally would have done.
Okay. And some of them, I think, last for quite a long time. Some of them are temporary. And so, and we're kind of go what we're trying to do really in this podcast is go through some of the basics and then talk about some of the specific ones that would really be appropriate. So this is kind of the primer, if you will. But what is the difference between like a temporary tax credit and a permanent credit in the IRS tax code?
So, and each of these can end up being both at some point in their lifetime. And it's just a matter of really what it comes down to. Well, employee retention credit, that was temporary because it was, due to, it was COVID relief. R&D tax credit, which was defined in 1981, was a temporary credit until 2006. So it went through 35 years, never being a permanent part of the tax code. And why that happens, boy, we're going deep into tax. I'm going to lose your whole audience here. We're talking
We're gonna
tax.
nerd out a little too much, right?
But what really happens is Congress, when they put this incentive out there, they have to figure out a way to pay for it. There's always this checks and balances, and okay, I'm going to give money out. Where am I going to steal, lack of a better term, where am I going to steal that money from to be able to pay for this credit that now I'm giving people? And so that's why this one, R&D, was never permanent. 2000, I said six, 2016 actually is when it became permanent. So it was, 45 or 35 years. I had my math right. I just had my year wrong. And so they finally made that a permanent part of the tax code in 2016. So it's really just a matter of can we, Congress thinking now, can we make this permanent? Do we have enough money to support this? Does it put enough money back into the economy? R&D, in my mind, puts money back in the economy. So that helps to pay for it. And so that's part of it, is just figuring out, if it should be permanent, if it should be temporary. And a lot of the ones I deal with are temporary, just because every 2, 3 years they have to decide, is this worth it? Are we getting enough return on it? And can we afford to continue to do it? That's really in my mind how it comes about.
And a lot of this, it seems like it takes some prior planning or some prior kind of knowledge about these, either, with a consultant or something like that. You're not just gonna, these tax credits aren't just gonna come out of nowhere and hit you. But you've mentioned a couple that I think, would be helpful to understand. So the temporary one that is kind of in play right now that everybody is talking about is the employee retention tax credit that was in the 2020 CARES Act. So, is this apply to all businesses? Are there, can you give us some more details of if we should be concerned about this?
So every business should be concerned about it. Not every business is going to qualify. And
Okay.
what I'm saying, every business should be concerned because everybody's circumstances are unique when it came to how did COVID affect them and how did the pandemic affect them. There, I can go on my soapbox a little bit, and I probably won't spend a lot of time on this, but there are people out there saying everybody qualifies, which is not true. So be wary if you feel like you had something, if somebody's promising you millions of dollars in credits and you're wondering where the heck is this coming from. But if you meet one of two requirements that were defined in the CARES Act, and like you said, we're going to nerd out on taxes again for a second, tax codes. It was defined in the CARES Act, it was redefined in the Consolidated Appropriation Act, and then redefined in the American Rescue Plan. Three major tax acts that happened from 2020, over a year time, really. It was a 12, 13-month period, these three things happened. And what happened as COVID was continuing longer, I think, than they originally expected, they decided we better put some additional incentives out there. So the employee retention credit is a key one. A business can qualify for this if they meet one of two requirements. The first one is simple. It's math. We calculate our revenue and see if we had a significant drop in revenue in any quarter in 2020 or in 21. And this goes through the third quarter of 21 for most businesses. So it's really the last three quarters of 2020, the first three quarters of 21. Some businesses can go to the fourth quarter of 21, but let's assume that's those 6 quarters. In the year 2020, if your business had a 50, big drop, 50% drop in revenue in any quarter when we compare it to the same quarter in 2019, automatic qualification, you get to now start to quantify your credit. If you had a 20% drop in the year 21, again, compared to that same quarter in 19, automatic qualification, you qualify, let's quantify the credit. And this drop in revenue does not have to be, you do not have to prove that COVID affected you. You just have to prove that you had a drop in revenue. And so it's a really straightforward calculation. Boom, I meet the math, I qualify. But, you know, 50% drop is pretty big in 2020. And we have clients that have done it, restaurants, bars, theaters, gyms, you know, the common users of this. But that's not the only way to qualify. You can qualify. You're getting the, you can, we're going deep dive taxes to talk now. I mean, we got to laugh a little more because this is a, you know, now that
no, this is good. I understand it. This is good.
All right. So the other way to qualify, if you don't meet the math, is were you restricted, your business restricted by a government mandate, a mandate that was put in place due to COVID, due to some kind of restrictions, due to, you know, it, and it has to affect your business. It can't just be you're in an area where there's a mandate and so you qualify. No, we have to show that your business was affected. And so the easy one to explain is, let's say restaurants. Restaurants around the country, almost everywhere, were closed for a certain amount of time. No indoor dining. They have a mandate that affected them. They qualify. Even when they went to, let's say, 50% capacity. So you can eat indoor now. That's still a mandate. It's restricting their business. They qualify. And so restaurants are the easy one. Actually, medical as well, because medical, let's say your dentist was able to do a root canal, but they were closed from being to do just a checkup. They couldn't do that for, you know, maybe it was 2 weeks, maybe it was 4 weeks, maybe it was 6 weeks, but there was a moment of time that they were affected. So if you didn't meet the math, the 20% drop in 21 or 50% drop in 20, and you can prove that you were affected by a government mandate that restricted your ability to conduct business, now you qualify as well. So one or the other, not both. There's some confusion on that. People think, well, I didn't have the drop in revenue, I don't qualify. But that's not true. And if you let me ramble for a couple more minutes, I can give you another good example on that. So besides having a lot of fun talking tax, I actually own a partner in a craft beer bar in Chicago as well. And we're a craft beer bar and a liquor store. So we have two entities in the same building, in the same place. In Chicago, we were under capacity restrictions in the bar from March 17th, 2020 till June 11th of 21. So a long period. I mean, well over a year, there was restrictions in place. The liquor store was essential. There was no restrictions in place. And obviously, you know, liquor's essential. So it was an essential business, no restrictions. If you looked at the overall financial statements for our business, revenue overall in 2020 and in 21 was significantly up because a lot of people got drunk at home. So they would buy stuff. But so my revenue didn't drop at all. In fact, it increased significantly. But the fact that my bar revenue was under restrictions, and there's some math you can do there to determine, but the fact that a portion of my business was restricted allowed me to qualify for the credit. So that's what I was pointing out. Everybody's got a unique situation. Just because there's an increase in revenue, well, let's find out if there was a portion of your business affected. If so, you can still qualify for this.
Well, and I think, right. Yeah, deep breath, because I got a question about it too. Right. Yep. But I think that this is an important piece, is that even when, I mean, if you go back to looking at how you got the PPP loan, right? Yep. It was looking at a quarter comparison, a quarter to a quarter. So mm-hmm. you don't always have to look at the whole, right? It's not the total of each revenue for each year. It's like, you know, did you have a bad first, second, or third quarter of 2020 compared to 19, which was a lot of people's banner financial year, right?
Yep.
So it's not the total, but I think that that's a key. But the other thing that you said is that is to qualify. And now once you have qualified, then you have to quantify or calculate what the actual credit was. So I think that's where we're going next, right?
Yes, I think that's a good point, because if this thing's worth a dollar, it's not worth my time, right?
Right.
So what's it? Although if you want to hand me a dollar right now, I'll take it, but it's not, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. I'm not driving to St. Louis to pick up that dollar.
I'll tell you
that right now. So, yes. So 21, I kind of mentioned things got enhanced in the, you know, a couple different tax codes. Let's go 2020 first, and then you'll see it's a significant credit, and then I'll blow your mind when we talk 21 credits. All right, so 2020, the credit was an annual credit for 2020, and annual means as soon as you were affected or as soon as your revenue drop started, as early as March 13th, that's when this kicked in. So March 13th of 2020 is the earliest you can qualify, all the way to the end of the year. Let's assume a company qualified for the entire year. The credit is the 50% of the first $10,000 of wages per employee, eligible wages. And I say eligible because, and you mentioned, Melissa, that PPP. You can do both. You can have a PPP and ERC, but you can't use the same wages for both. So you need to segregate out those wages, which for 2020 is usually fairly easy, especially if you qualified the whole time, because, you know, $10,000, if you have full-time employees, let's assume, you have $10,000 of wages per employee for 9.5 month period, they're probably going to be well more than that, even taking out whatever you used of their wages for forgiveness. So very simply, one employee is worth $5,000 credit in the year 2020, most likely. If you have 10 employees, small business, 10 employees, there's a $50,000 credit sitting there. And if you haven't done this yet, and if you qualify, sitting there right now, that's just sitting there. That's an asset that you don't even know exists that's sitting there for the asking. And I say that because this is not, we didn't even talk on this at all, but tax credits in general, if anybody knows tax credits, you think, okay, a credit I have to use to offset my income taxes, kind of like the example I used before, the $400,000 dropping to $300,000. In this scenario, a tax credit is cash. It doesn't matter what taxes you paid. It doesn't matter if you're ever going to pay taxes in the future. If you say you have a $50,000 credit, you file the forms, the IRS sends you a $50,000 check. So this is money. That's exactly what this is. So that's the year 2020. Small business, 10 employees could have a potential $50,000 refund check sitting there. And when you're talking about valuation, that might be a nice asset going back into the business. So at least, you know, small business.
That's true.
All right. So that's
for any small business, though, you have 2, 3, 4 employees. I mean, and again, let's go back to the conversation that we just had. This is not a tax deduction.
Right.
This is a tax credit. So this is, if you paid $5,000 in taxes, you get $5,000 back, right?
Well, you don't even have to pay taxes in this one.
Okay.
This is, I have a credit, I get a refund check.
Awesome. Okay.
Refundable credits don't happen. IRS doesn't give out refundable credits. This is one that they did. This is a very unique. You mentioned my podcast was the Unique CPA. So I try to build that into my conversation. This is a very unique credit that CPAs get to deal with and as a refund. So it honestly doesn't matter what your taxes are at all. You know, you get this check, you get this money back. So I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No. So, but tell us more. So is it going to end? Like, what should we do?
Well, let's go 21 first.
Yeah,
then we'll go to that.
21. Right. Perfect.
So 21 is, so this is where it gets really exciting. Again, I'm a tax geek. That's probably coming off on this, but I love this stuff. It's so fun. I'm putting money back into businesses at this point with the employee retention credit. I've put $160 million of money back into businesses. To me, that's just amazing. So let's talk 21. 21, the credit now became quarterly. In 2020, it was an annual credit. 21, it's a quarterly credit. And in 20, it was a 50% credit of the first $10,000 wages. In 21, it is a 70% of the first $10,000 of wages per quarter. So in this scenario, that same 10-person company could have $70,000 of credit per quarter. They have, you know, $100,000 of wages, 10 employees, $10,000 wages each, 70% of that, $70,000. If they qualify all the way through September Of 21, that's three quarters. That's $210,000 of refunds available in the year 21. Add the $50,000 from last year, $260,000 of refunds for this small 10-person business. That's why this is so exciting, and that's why this is that's why I smile a lot when I talk about this. It's fun to help these businesses put this money back in.
Now, do you think that the businesses are really going to understand this, or are we going to have a bunch of like amended tax returns and people kind of having to go back and say, okay, did I qualify in 2020? Do I need to amend my return, or am I just like getting too ahead of myself?
No, that's a great question, because this is a huge topic right now in the industry. There's two things to go to there. This is actually a payroll tax credit. I didn't even mention that before. It's not an income tax credit. So okay. It gets filed on the 941, the payroll tax return, but it does affect the income statement or the tax return, the income return. Income tax return. I can't talk. I'm getting too excited here. The income tax return. Melissa, keep me on track here. So it does affect the income tax return. And so, you know, we're recording on March 15th. Most pass-through entities, tax returns, S-Corps, LLCs are due today. If they haven't taken this credit, they're not putting on this tax return. So they're going to have to go back and amend. The issue is, and this is no reason not to look at the credit, the issue is, if we file, let's assume a company hasn't applied for ERC and they qualify. That's a big if. You have to qualify. I'm not going to be in that category where people promises everybody that qualifies. That is not, by far, not the case. But if you qualify, you haven't taken it yet, you filed your S-Corp return, let's say, today, as you and I are sitting, not as this is being broadcast. I'm ruining timing on this now. You're hearing secrets on how quickly you record this and get it out. But you have to adjust that income tax return. So you're going to have to go back and amend it. This is the concern. I file today for the ERC, and it's not going to happen if I haven't looked at it, but you know, I file next month for the ERC for 21, all three quarters. Let's assume that scenario. I had $210,000 of refunds coming for the year 21. That's supposed to be income on my tax return, my income tax return. Even though it's a credit against my payroll taxes, it's income on my income tax return. Unlike PPP, which didn't end up being income, this one does. I'm not going to receive that refund from the IRS for 9 months, 10 months, a year. It's taken them a long time. So if I pick up $210,000 of income today, and again, let's say I'm in a 30% bracket, that's $63,000 of tax I'm going to pay on money I haven't received yet. That's a big issue. That's something I really think IRS needs to address. I think you should be able to pick up this income in the year you receive it rather than the year the wages were used. That's not what the tax code says. That's a little bit of a dilemma. I think what's going to happen is a lot of people are going to wait till they get their refunds. They're going to amend their tax return. They're going to hope the IRS doesn't get mad and say, hey, you got a penalty for late payment. They've pretty much already come out and said they're not going to penalize for paying this late because they know that there's a timing issue. Mm-hmm. But they were specifically talking about 2020 when they said that. I assume that'll carry forward to 21. Now I'm losing. Now you're getting glassy-eyed here as I'm talking this stuff. So we'll move on to the next topic. But that is an issue. You kind of mentioned it. We have an interplay with the income tax return, and there's decisions that need to be made on when we have to adjust that return.
Well, but I think it is helpful for business owners to understand that there are little chinks in the armor, and we don't know what we can do, but you know, because everybody would be like, oh my gosh, this is easy money. Well, there might be a payment, you know. So there are some intricacies that you need to be aware of.
There's a lot. Sorry, Melissa, I cut you off. But there's a lot of interplay between the ERC and other things. You know, you have to, PPP is just one where I say you have to double, you know, you can't double dip. You can't double dip with R&D tax credit wages. You can't double dip with WOTC, work opportunity tax credit wages. restaurant revitalization grants interplay with this. Even the EIDL loan, the EIDL loans that a lot of companies took as well from the SBA, there's an interplay. Now, some of these are big effects, some of them are not much of an effect, but you have to know how all these play together. And that's, I've spent my last year basically educating everybody in the country on employee retention credits. And I don't know what I'm going to do for an encore. This might be the end of my career, because I don't think I can find something that I enjoy this much again.
I'm pretty sure people are going to be dealing with this for years, because the IRS is so backed up.
Yes.
You know, I mean, nothing's happening. But the other tax credit that I think, you know, so this is kind of something that has happened. You obviously need to address it, you know, with your own accountant. And if you don't, if you're not working, I think this is encouraging a lot of business owners to start working with accountants, because some of this stuff is complex. And if you mess it up, it could come back to haunt you. But another credit that I think people are more aware of, at least, they may not know the details of it, which you're going to help us with, but it's really talking about like these research and development tax credits. Like in my mind, when I'm talking about research and development, if I'm like a business owner, I'm like, well, I don't do any research. Like I don't develop any products, or I don't keep track of it, you know? Right. So what do we do here?
Yeah, that is not an uncommon statement there. I'll go into places that I know they're doing R&D, and I just lied there because I don't go into our clients anymore. When we started 15 years ago, I would go in.
Right.
Now I'm just the talking head. I just go out and talk about it. But we will go into clients that they say, I don't do R&D. And sometimes they're right. They don't.
Right.
But it's not as complex as it sounds like just by the name. You know, it probably should be called new or improved process credit. Rather than R&D credit. So, you know, do I have processes? Every company has a process. Now that has to have technology involved in it. So it's not just, you know, how are we moving paper around in the office? Maybe there's a process to that, but it's probably not an R&D process. And so to qualify for R&D, and before I tell you that, most common users, manufacturers, software developers, architects, engineering companies, even the construction industry potentially can qualify. It's iffier, but I've seen credits in that. Those are common industries for the credit. So if you're in one of those, you should be looking at it to see if you qualify. But anybody that meets a four-part test that is defined in IRS code, and we can go really deep and say code section 41, the IRS code, it says, I qualify for the R&D tax credit if I meet this four-part test. First being, do I have a business component, which says, do I have a new or improved product or process? But it goes further. Do I have a new or improved, and improves key, new or improved product, process, technique, formula, invention, or software? One of those are the business components they specifically call out. Then number two, you have to have technology involved with what you're doing. So, you know, engineering, computer science, you know, material sciences, biology, chemistry, you know, not like a marketing science or a management technique, anything like that. Some kind of hard science involved, which again, that's pretty straightforward looking at, you know, Melissa, you may do some software development internally for your business to help manage something. That's a technology, computer science you're doing. Those two are straightforward. The next two are the meat of the four-part test. I have to have uncertainty, and the uncertainty doesn't have to be, and that's a little nebulous. What's uncertainty mean? It doesn't have to be, can I even do this? It doesn't have to be, is it possible? It doesn't have to be, you know, can I develop a time machine? You know, that level of uncertainty. It can be, can I do something better, faster, cheaper, more efficient, less operations, less waste, less weight, reduce shipping costs, whatever it is. I'm doing something different. Even if I have an existing product, I just want to be more efficient with that product. That's enough uncertainty. And then if there's uncertainty, the fourth part ties in experimentation, which is, you know, evaluating different alternatives to see if we can come up with a solution to whatever the problem is that we have come up with. And experimentation is, you know, conceptual idea. Hey, I have an idea. I want to do this. Or I got an order. We need to now figure out how we're going to manufacture this. you know, to design, to testing, to prototyping, to CAD work, to, you know, evaluating, going through that multiple times. Experimentation is the timeline we quantify for the credit. But bottom line is new, improved product or process, technology involved, uncertainty, not ultimate, just some level of uncertainty and experimentation. A lot of businesses have projects that incorporate all four of those. If so, they need to look at quantifying that for a credit.
But Randy, I mean, like, we're post-pandemic. Like, you and I are only meeting virtually. Like, isn't everybody essentially having to double down on technology and figure out how to do this business stuff in this way? Like, don't you think there's a lot more opportunity now that people are just by way of transitioning their business to a post-COVID like business economy, which I really think is where we are, isn't that a lot of, I mean, because that's a lot of technology. Like, would I qualify? Do you think it's easier to qualify for some of these credits now?
I think it is. I think you'll see a lot more of it. I think you've been watching my webinars because I've been saying that. So thank you for paying attention. But yes, not just purchasing technology though. You have to be doing something. You right now can have an accounting system. You can have a CRM system. You can have a, you know, I don't think you're shipping, you know, a lot, but a shipping system. You can have all these systems already that you bought, these technology packages. Now you want them to all work together. You want it to work with your Zoom now too. You want to work with your Teams. You want to whatever. Now you're developing some modules internally to get all these technology packages that you purchased to work together seamlessly. That integration can qualify for the credit. So I see that for sure. One thing I want to point out, and I like using my buyer as an example. Now, when I just did the four-part test there, you're not thinking, oh yeah, a buyer is going to qualify for an R&D tax credit. Well, what you just said, when we were shut down, the liquor store already had an online store. It started blowing up. We started shipping around the country. We already were. We had to make this online store more robust. A lot of software development internally that we did just on the software to do the sales. But then we had to integrate with the POS system. We had to integrate with the shipping system, the online system, even FedEx. FedEx did this same day delivery. They came to us and said, hey, we want to start doing this and we want you to be the guinea pig. And so we're going to do two windows of same day delivery of your product within a 60-mile radius. Now we had to tie into their software as well. And so all that software development created an R&D tax credit for a liquor store that you never would have thought would have had an R&D tax credit. So you are exactly right.
No, and I think that it is going to change everything, because we are having to, you know, I tell business owners every day, I was like, every way that you do business right now is continuing to change. Like, I know you pivoted for the pandemic, but like, continue, keep that pivot hat right on, because we're going to continue to change. You know, like, we've been talking a lot. I've been talking with other businesses about building communities. Well, building communities, you can do them on other people's platforms or you can do them on your own platforms. Mm-hmm. Well, people are trying to reinvent these ways that we communicated pre-pandemic. And I think that a lot of people are putting, I mean, I've bought an app. I had to buy this, you know, other website. I had to buy this other stuff and put it together. But I think what you're saying is, I would still need to put that together. So then if I offered like a valuation training program or something.
So,
or would it have to be like a product, like a valuation calculator?
So when we're talking software, it's going to be more the platform behind the scenes that's running something. So let's say that you bought an app, but I'm going to give you two examples here. You bought an app. All right, great. They had to do programming for your app, right? You may have an R&D tax credit for that if you took on the risk of that programming. You know, if you bought an app and they said, hey, Melissa, we're going to charge you $10,000 and we're going to put this app together for you. you really didn't take a risk on, because you know you have a flat fee of $10,000 and now they don't get paid unless they, you know, deliver you this app that works.
Sure.
If the app company came to you and said, Melissa, we're going to develop this app for you, and there's some complexities here because we have this valuation software we want to build it and everything, and we're not sure how this is going to work exactly, so you're going to pay us $200 an hour until we get this working, or if we can't get it working, you're still paying us $200 an hour. In that scenario, you took on the risk, because if this fails, you are the one that's hurt by it. You're paying to try to do this. There's uncertainty there. And so even if we're outsourcing somebody to put some software to developer, some software together for us, you could take a credit in that scenario. Okay. And I don't remember the other thing I was going to say.
Well, but that's helpful, because I think that everybody's getting it. So we talked about how to qualify again for this credit. How do we quantify? Is it just all the expenses that we pay, like every dollar that we can find, or is there a better way to go about it?
Yeah, that's man, you are really good at this hosting stuff. You're just taking us right in the right path. I'm going to have you on the Unique CPA as well, but I won't be as good a host as you, obviously. Let's go down that path.
And I would be uniquely not a CPA, so that would be the more fun.
Well, there you go, the unique non-CPA. So right. That's what we'll do. But valuation, I mean, that's huge in public accounting. So I would love to talk about that. All right, we digress. Let's go into quantifying the R&D tax credit. This one is not as straightforward as ERC, because, you know, ERC is, hey, I have an employee, I pay them, boom. And there was some complexity on ERC I didn't get into, if you're a large employer, small employer, but we don't have time for that. Unless we want to go 4 hours. I mean, if you want to go 4 hours today, I'll do it.
All right.
So R&D tax credits then. We look at that experimentation timeline, you know, idea to manufacturing or to, you know, running a software and all the expenses in the middle there. It's four things we can take into account: salaries and wages. So like the ERC, it's based on salaries, but no limitation. If we pay somebody, we get to take whatever percentage of their time times their W-2 is their expense for this. So it's salaries and wages. It's outsourcing, you know, in our app scenario, you outsource development. Okay, if that qualifies, we get to take that into account as well. If we're in a manufacturing setting, or even and this is a fun one, craft brewery setting, where they're, you know, they're using supplies. If they're consuming supplies in the development process or in the prototype process, we can take those material costs into the credit. And the fourth one, which we see but not a lot, is rental of computer time, which we see now because of, you know, cloud computing services that are used for R&D. So we look at those four expenses on all the projects for that year, not the project start and stop, but what happened during the year. If that's, let's say, $1 million of expenses, and for a, you know, $10 million manufacturer, $1 million of R&D expenses is probably normal, probably even low. And so in that scenario, the credit is about 10% of those costs. And so in that scenario, $1 million of cost, $100,000 credit. And again, this one's not like ERC. It's not a refund. It is, I have to offset taxes. And so we take that $100,000 and we reduce our income tax bill by $100,000. Or if we're a startup business, which startup businesses are defined as businesses that are 5 years or less, pretty much is the rule, and our current revenue is less than $5 million, if we have that scenario, it is almost refundable because we can use it to offset payroll taxes. So if we are paying anybody, we can use it to offset payroll taxes and get the money back that way. So that's the how you quantify. That's how you use it. And that's the quick course in R&D tax credits.
Well, I'm thinking under your scenario, either a microbrewery or a winery. Like we would maybe have to research what type of wine we want to make. So we would have to consume all of that product.
Oh, I thought you were saying you and I have to go research if their wine was any good. So we have to go out there. You know, they can pay us to taste their wine, and that's part of the testing process. Yeah. In craft brewery or winery, which there's the wine trail not far from you in Southern Illinois, right? So there's some wineries down there. And craft breweries are, St. Louis is big craft brewery town as well. And so, in fact, the, you know, I won't say who, but we've done a handful of R&D tax credits in your town. So breweries, every time they have a new formulation, there's probably R&D. Anytime they're doing a seasonal beer, a one-off beer, a test batch, that's all involves R&D. And the interesting thing about breweries, only because you brought it up, and I already brought up beer like five times already, so I guess I brought it up, but because we talk breweries, their credits can grow significantly with all the, you know, the water, the hops, the grains, the yeast that go into all those test batches. All those four ingredients can now become part of the credit, and that can be a significant cost when they're doing test batches. So the breweries in general have had bigger credits the last 5 or 6 years because this rule kind of changed 5 or 6 years ago. And so it's been a fun industry for us to work with as well.
Now, the only other thing that I think that people are actively doing now post-pandemic is creating like training packages and becoming like more, you know, leadership training or whatever, teaching a skill, things like that. And a lot of that is online. A lot of that is like, are you seeing people like that being able to get it because they're kind of pulling together, but it's still, I don't know if they have the risk.
Right. Well, the risk would be an issue, but, and they may, we'd have to look at it. We just analyze projects, see if they took on the risk. If they did, they did. If they didn't, they didn't. But what more so it is, you know, creating the training program itself, you know, the content and whatever tests and all that, that alone, no, because there's not technical uncertainty in that. But if we're creating the platform to run it on, you know, the software platform, that's, and we've seen plenty of training companies where we have taken credits for that platform development. Yeah. That's really the key aspect of it.
Okay. Okay. So in general, if somebody's like, you know, I think I might have some of these credits, they would go to, you know, somebody like you, and you would look at all of the different business credit options and kind of look and see what. Now, should they expect this from their regular CPA? Like, should their you know, because I don't think I always see that anybody's doing in-depth consulting. Like if you just hire somebody to do your personal tax return or your company tax return, and they're not getting really deep into anything else, are they going to find these credits, or do you have to go out and kind of seek them?
So it's a great question, and it's why we exist. Because these are really complex part of the tax code. And I am a CPA. I was a generalist. I was in public accounting. I was doing every, you know, tax returns from whatever, you know, a brewery to a manufacturer to a software, all these industries. But as a generalist, as your normal CPA, they just can't become an expert in R&D or ERC or cost or all these things that I work with. And so because of that, we work with CPAs. That's where our business comes from. We support CPAs. We are not a competitor with a CPA firm by any means. And so that's our whole thing. So CPAs in general, and I say CPAs somewhat generically because you got EAs, you got tax preparers. Sure, I mean, sure. I'm a CPA, so I take pride in that. So I say CPA.
You're a unique CPA.
That's right. I used to be called the wacky accountant. So I'm glad that one's
moved up.
Yeah, exactly. Went from the wacky accountant to the unique CPA. It's a little more sophisticated. So yeah. That was just my family would call me that and friends. I've never told anybody that.
It's all public now.
You can edit that out, right?
Of course. Sure you will.
Wink, wink. All right. So we support the CPAs. Part of my fun is I just educate on this stuff, and hopefully that comes across that I enjoy it as we're talking today, because I do. And so I've probably, you know, I don't even know, 30 education, whether it's a webinar or conference. You count the podcast, that's more, but that's all CPAs who are my audience, and that's who I talk to, and that's, I want them. My goal is that a CPA learns enough when they listen to me that they can identify an opportunity. They're not going to be able to be an expert. They're not going to quantify a document. They're not going to do any of that, but identify, because as a CPA, that's what you need to know. You can't I mean, if you stack the tax code, you know, page by page, you know, you'd be, you know, reaching the moon or something. That's crazy. And so you can't know everything, but you can know it exists. And that's my whole goal. So if somebody's CPA is not bringing this to them, that's not out of the ordinary. Right. The CPAs that we work with, obviously, we're constantly educating, and hopefully they're able to identify and then bring this to them.
And that's the point, is like, it's not your normal CPA bookkeeper. This isn't their responsibility to come up with these types of things. But, and I think it became more clear at the beginning of the pandemic when we had all the PPP loans. There were so many people coming out and saying so many conflicting, wrong information that it really did take a handful of people to go deep dive, figure it out, and then help, you know, others. So that's where this comes into. Now, before we talk a little bit about your firm, we've gone so much information. Are there any other important tax credits that you just want to at least mention for business owners to kind of keep on their radar, maybe give us a little information about it? Because these things, they could ask their accountant or they could reach out to you and we'll give all that information. But tell us any other ones that we just need to like ping to our brain.
Yeah, I'll touch on a few just very quickly, which I don't always do very quickly. So we'll do the best we can.
Give it a try.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason we talk about this right now is because you mentioned it too. With the pandemic, we're used to this stuff. I mean, we're used to PPP. We're used to employee retention credit. We're used to the EIDL loans, the restaurant revitalization grants, the, you know, shutter venue grants. All these things came out in the last 2 years, but there's other things that have existed and will continue to exist that make sense to be educated on, to learn about. And so a couple of key ones that I specifically am passionate about, really basic one, is cost segregation. That's an incentive. It's not a credit. But it's anybody that owns a depreciable property, whether it's residential rental or commercial property. Normally, those are depreciated over like 39 years or 27 and a half years. And what CostSeg does, it goes in and it breaks down those buildings into smaller components and see what portions you can accelerate and depreciate quicker. Okay. So rather than buying $1 million building and taking 1/39th of it every year, if I can find 400,000 of that has shorter lifespan, I can take that in 5, 7, 15 years instead of 39. So that's cost seg. It's pretty much anybody that owns a depreciable property.
Okay.
There's two other real estate incentives that are interesting. One's a credit and one's a deduction. The credit is 45L. That is for developers of residential property. So if you're developing residential, you know, a real estate developer, you're developing residential property and we can show that it's energy efficient. I won't go into the definition, but a lot of them will qualify. If it's energy efficient, a developer can get it up to $2,000 tax credit per unit they develop. So they built 100 homes last year and they all qualify. There's $100,000 tax credit. Again, reduction of income taxes. That's cash in their hand. 179D is a deduction for commercial property. So if I have a commercial building and I can show that's energy efficient, I can take a portion of that and write it off over 1 year rather than 39 years. So 179D is another real estate incentive. And then the last one we'll touch on, which is not, I was going to say similar to ERC, not really similar, but it's an employee credit again. It's based on wages. It's a new hire credit, which is interesting because there's a lot of new hiring going on right now. And you can get this credit if you hire an individual who either meets a certain demographic definition or geographic location. And if they meet that, there's anywhere from $2,400 to $9,600 credit per new hire. And so this is a pretty interesting area, especially with people being used to employment credits with the ERC. Now there's this WOTC work opportunity tax credit that is out there, and that's something to look at as well. And those are really the key things that people should be aware of and thinking about going forward, because these exist. The lifespan of these haven't run out for the most part. Some of them need to be renewed right now, but they should all stick around for a while.
Well, and we have the great resignation or the great reshuffle that's going to eventually result in the great rehire.
Yes.
As everybody kind of, you know, redefines what they want in life and things like that. And so I think there's going to be some opportunities in that capacity. Now, Randy, you've given us so much information, and I really appreciate the fact that you've said that you are not in competition with accounting firms. You're kind of like a secret weapon for them to help their consumers if they don't have those professionals on staff, which right now it is hard to keep everybody knowing this deep of information about these credits. And like you said, the IRS tax code is not easy to understand. No. So tell us how people can get a hold of you, how your process, how you work. You know, we do have typically a lot of valuation accounting people that watch the podcast. So they are, you know, kind of probably interested in this information. But tell us more about your firm.
Yeah, well, our firm's Trimerit. May 7th of 2022 is our 15-year anniversary, so getting pretty excited about that celebration we're planning. I already said what we do and who we work for. It's mainly CPAs that we get our business from. You can get information on us on our website, which is tri-merit.com, which I know you have logos coming up or banners coming. Look at you. This is such a professional podcast. I feel unworthy of being on here. So Trimerit,
we just have some magic.
So Trimerit is the website. You can get all the information there. There's links to my podcast on it as well, The Unique CPA. In fact, I think that has a, there we go, uniquecpa.com. And so anything there, you can find out more about us. I honestly tell people I'm available anytime for an email, for a phone call. I answer any questions. Anything we do personally, our business, is there's no strings attached. If we don't find anything or if people don't want to move forward, there's no fees due to us. So it is a, hey, let's do an investigation, seeing if something there. If there is, great. Let's go to engagement letter. If there's not, at least we investigated and you at least got a comfort level that yes, there is or no, there's not. So it's pretty easy to work with us. And we purposely have done that.
Well, and the one thing that we didn't have up there was your email address, because everybody loves an email. So reach out. I encourage people to reach out on LinkedIn, too, because, you know, quite frankly, this is a digital world and we need to connect digitally as well. And you need to be out there on LinkedIn growing your base anyway. But this has been very helpful. I'm sure we're going to figure out another topic to talk about. So I'm sure we'll see you again. Or I will be on the ununique.
You'll be on there.
Not CPA. No, just kidding.
But you have worked in public accounting. I know that. So
I know. God love them. Yeah. I'm a little financial little bullet that kind of goes through the accounting world. But
well, you're in much need in this industry, especially these days too, with a lot of M&A work going on. I'm assuming that's been big for you.
So much craziness going on in the world. Well, we appreciate all of your time, Randy, and we will probably call you back for another fun topic so we can nerd out on accounting things, which a lot of people love to do. So like, right, we're not alone. Some people are going to be sitting there going, we love this. We're nerds too. Like, hello, you know, the revenge of the nerds. We're just successful nerds at this
nerd
point.
I thought I was a geek. I'm a nerd too. So I got both ends of things going. All right, great.
I love all of them. All right. Well, thanks, Randy. We'll talk to you soon.